President Trump signed a new executive order yesterday, which, among other things, suspends America's refugee program for 120 days and reduces the number of people who'll be accepted from the Obama-era cap of 110,000 to 50,000. Syrians will be among the most affected. Evgeny Afanivsky's latest documentary, Cries from Syria, takes a look at the history and tragedy of Syria's six-year civil war, and he joins us now, along with Khalud Helmi, an editor and co-founder of the underground newspaper Enab Baladi, and one of the film's subjects. The film opens this Friday at the Cinema Village and runs for a week, and it will also air on HBO this coming Monday, March 13th at 10 p.m. I'm very pleased to welcome Evgeny Afanivsky and Khalud Helmi to our show now. Hi.
Hi.
Evgeny, your last documentary, Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom, was nominated for an Academy Award. But what led you from that conflict with Ukraine, which obviously you have some personal connection to the Syrian conflict?
You know what, it's hard to say that it's personal connection because, you know what, I was born in Russia when it was former USSR, and Ukraine was just a part of this combination of republics, and I just had a friend in Ukraine. So I don't know how we can say that it's personal, but it's still something that I as a filmmaker wanted to tackle and to bring these innocent voices and to show to the world. Same here, you know what, immediately after Winter on Fire, it was a lot of news about waves of refugees, and actually huge waves of refugees that the world not experienced since Second World War. So I wanted to try to understand this. I started to follow refugees, and I realized that the answer, first of all, is not in Europe. The answer is completely different. And I went back in history, reconstructing it, and I went back towards the borders to the Middle East to look for the characters that sparked the revolution, why it sparked the revolution. Because you know what? Like in every story, you need to have beginning, middle, and end for the filmmaker. And for me, yeah.
And Americans, or most people outside of Syria, I imagine, are unaware of much of this history. But I should point out, Russia doesn't come off looking very well in this film either. How were you able to get permission to film in Syria? Did you have to go through Bashar al-Assad's government?
No, never. You know what? First of all, if you need to cross the border, I think I was following their pass because, you know what, if you're following their pass, you're using smugglers and it's exactly their journey. So you're experiencing what they're experiencing. And you know what, for most of the Syrians, to cross the border is to pay money. And money working in these days too.
Khalud, the release of this film couldn't be timelier because President Trump's new order will have a real impact on Syrian refugees hoping to come to the United States. Is the U.S. a favorite destination? Don't most of the refugees try to settle in European countries?
For Syrians, I mean, the United States is far, far away and they don't have access to. So I think no one is thinking about coming to the States as a refuge, a refuge for them.
Evgeny, you begin your film with the image that went viral of two Syrian boys whose bodies washed up on a Turkish beach.
Actually, one boy. It's Ilan Kurdi.
Yeah. And why do you think that's what finally alerted the world to the magnitude of the Syrian refugee crisis? Because it had been going on for quite a while at that point.
It is. But you know what? I guess the press was less concentrating on that. And I guess this was kind of a red flag for me. But I also, for the first time, like you said, I used images of the kids. And first was Ilan Kurdi, 3 years old, September 2015.
A lot of young dead children in this film, unfortunately.
Yes, it is. But you know what? This is the lost generation of the kids. And I try to focus on this lost generation. Because this lost generation, A, they're wise enough to voice themselves. I wanted to bring their voices. And also through these three images, Ilan was the first one. It's symbolizing death of the kids of this generation of Syrian kids. Second one was August 2016, Amran, whose image everybody saw in an ambulance. This was symbolizing struggle and survival. And Bana Alabed, whom we filmed actually in December last year, she was symbolizing hope. And despite all the deaths, despite all the atrocities, these kids have a lot of light, a lot of hope. And you know what? I'm going back to what Khalud just said. You know what? They don't want to be refugees because at the end of the day, they all want to go home. Despite all what's happening, these kids want to go home. They don't want to struggle. They want right now they want shelter, and this is what we don't understanding about them, and this is what we can learn from the movie. They want shelter from the atrocities.
Let's look a little bit at this history, Khalid. What was the Syrian government before the military coup d'etat in 1963, and who came to power at that point?
We used to have our president, so we're elected by the Syrians. And
so it was similar to Lebanon?
Similar to Lebanon a little bit after we got our independence from the French. Great and prominent presidents were elected at that time. Democracy prevailed and all these things. But out of a sudden, we started to have all these coups, and then Hafez al-Assad came into power.
That's in 1971.
Yes.
And he was replacing a military leadership, but he's military as well.
He did a coup to gain power, and then he replaced his precedents and seized the power till this day.
Now, there were objections. In 1982, the residents of Hama rebelled.
Yeah.
What were they complaining about? What were they fighting for?
They were fighting for their share in politics. In politics and to regain their rights, at least to share in the saying on decision-making in Syria.
So that led to a 72-day siege by al-Assad's military.
Yeah.
And then in 2000, Hafez al-Assad died. And in the beginning, many people, at least in the West, expected Bashar, his son and successor, to be a reformer because he'd been educated in the West. What about people in Syria?
This.
You too?
We expected this.
You first appear in the film proudly explaining Syria's ancient history.
Yeah.
What should Americans know about Syria that they probably don't?
In the past or now? You mean the history of the country?
Yeah, well, it's like, often called the cradle of civilization.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing that I think that the most prominent thing is the vividness of Syria and all the civilizations that came into Syria since eternity till now. I mean, since the first days of creation till this moment.
Was this a problem for you, Evgeny, in organizing this film? Because you wanted to give us a sense of the past and at the same time include so many of these amazing stories of what's been happening over the past 6 years, many of them totally unknown, I imagine, to people outside of the area.
I think my main goal was to bring their voices and to enlighten us because we have lack of knowledge about them. All the news about Syria and the Syrian conflict came through these waves of refugees that nobody knew and only had fear. Fear because the press created from them somebody who wants to invade our Western world. And you know what? And I decided to learn about them. And fear comes from lack of knowledge. So I was trying to bring this knowledge and to explain about these people. Who are they? Why they're fleeing their homes? Because at the end of the day, I learned, and you can learn it from the movie, that their choice, their own homeland, is to die in Assad's prisons from torturing, to die under the shelling of Russians or Assad's regime, to die in ISIS hands, or to die from the chemical weapons. And they're trying to survive. Specifically, they're trying to allow their kids to survive. So I think this is the main situation why they're fleeing homes, but they all want to go back homes.
You have footage of some of the earliest Syrian activists being tortured by the military. Some of them were young boys who painted anti-Assad graffiti on some walls. And you have photos revealing the physical assaults they endured while in prison. How did you get all of that stuff? Were people documenting everything with their cameras, with their telephones?
I think it was the biggest weapon for them. I think the cameras and the technology nowadays, the technology that are advancing day by day, I think this was their weapon in the first days because, you know what, at the end of the day, they not were using weapons when they were protesting. And in order to document these things, document in order not to have any propaganda from the government side, they were using all means what they had in their hands, from cell phones that are premature cell phones to later on the professional cameras. So this was their means of weapon compared to the Assad regime, who was meeting them with the real weapons and real bullets.
How young were some of the activists who were being tortured?
Oh, 10, 11, 12 years old kids. You know what? We actually found five of those kids. One is living right now in Austria. Another three returned from Jordan back to Syria, because for a lot of people, like I said, they want to go home. And another one is living in Jordan. So we interviewed quite often most of them, but we include only one of them in the movie.
Khalid, was there a kind of a generation gap? The younger people being inspired by Arab Spring while older people just accepting life as it was?
It seems so. It seems like the older generation were so traumatized and afraid of what happened during 1982. So they decided to keep silent. And we grew up in a situation where all parents tell their kids that wolves have ears, so shut up and don't mention anything. But at the end, inspired by the Arab Spring, including myself, we, the young generation, refused to keep silent, and then we had our say.
And you were initially optimistic that a revolution would break out in Syria, and maybe it would topple Assad. When did you begin to despair that only tragedy would unfold for people who were rebelling?
When we first started to face death machines, and it was August 2012 when the regime broke into my hometown, Daraya, and killed 1,000 people in 3 days.
People who were not fighting
civilians.
Back. They had water. And
we didn't have FSA at that time. Like, they were like little groups fighting back. But they killed civilians in their homes. And at that time, I thought that there must be something that happening. But the worst part in it was the chemical weapons.
And that was fairly early in the response.
It was
a line that Barack Obama said Assad couldn't cross, but then he crossed it and there were no recriminations.
To be frank, most of the presidents in this world have mentioned lots of red lines, but Assad crossed all these lines.
You wear a shirt in the film with a message on it. What's the message?
We had a dream.
We're going to take a little break and come back and talk more about what happened to that dream with Khalid Helmi, an editor and co-founder of the underground newspaper Enab Baladi, one of the subjects of a film by Evgeny Afanivsky called Cries from Syria, which opens this Friday at the Cinema Village. We'll be running for a week there. You can also see it on HBO this coming Monday, March 13th at 10 p.m. Stay with us for more. And we are back with filmmaker Evgeny Afanivsky, whose latest documentary is called Cries from Syria. It opens this coming Friday at the Cinema Village, and we'll be running there for a week. You can also see it on HBO this coming Monday, March 13th at 10 p.m. And also with us is Khalid Helmi, who is one of the people featured in the film. She's an editor and co-founder of the underground newspaper Enab Baladi. What are you doing now? You can't go back to Syria, can you?
No, I can't.
What happens to the newspaper?
We still have reporters from inside Syria, but we are running the newspaper from Turkey now.
You ask in the film, how on earth can a regime torture these kids? It started off with torturing kids. And is that what shocked everyone? Is that why suddenly people who were afraid to speak came out of their homes?
I think it was the last straw for them, who was living with dictatorship for 40 years. From my opinion, who is outsider, I think this was the last straw that brought these people, brought their anger to the streets, because they not were able to hold it anymore. And again, it was a peaceful protesters that somehow reminded our country right now in these days that we also have a peaceful protesters. And also the same situation, they were called terrorists, and our government was announcing that they want to criminalize the same peaceful protest. I think for me, all of a sudden, I realizing that some parallels happening in the history.
So when the reaction to these peaceful protests was violence, did that mean that people thought, well, we're going to have to continue this but go underground?
The violence suddenly soared up, and people have no other choice. They have to continue because we demanded our human or fundamental human rights, we were faced by such violence. So if we keep silent, then we will ever go silent.
It wasn't just a matter of the police shooting at people.
Yeah.
We see in the film, one of the most horrific things is they set a man's hair on fire while he's...
Yeah. It's a torturing in the prisons. And as you know, I think 2 weeks ago, Amnesty actually published a huge report from the Sadnaya prison where a lot of people were tortured and killed. And actually, this is the useful tactics of the regime, of the Assad's regime, torturing people, inhuman things. And you know what? For me, the entire movie, I'm kind of summarizing in one sentence, that it's the journey into the darkest side of humanity that we can see in these days.
Khalid, how are Syrian activists using iPhones, Twitter, Facebook, and other social network platforms to keep the resistance alive? Because I'd imagine that people are terrified.
We're using this, but I mean... When I was in Syria, like when I was at home, I used to work under a side name. And a very small example, when we ran our newspaper, we ran it from underground. Like it was a secret. Even my parents didn't know that I am reporting what's going on. We took care of ourselves by hiding things.
Do we know what percentage of the public still supports Bashar?
There are people who still support Bashar, either because they won't support him, and others are afraid of resisting because they are under the control of regime.
What's your reaction when you hear some argue, like Vladimir Putin, and more recently some American politicians, mm-hmm. that Assad should stay as the best alternative to the various groups that are opposing him?
I just want to tell them, bring back all my friends who died in 7 years, and then keep him in power.
Evgeny, Bashar argued at one point that the people behind the revolution were terrorists. Did he offer any evidence to that?
You know, like our dearest president saying things and not offering evidence, I think it's a similar situation, because you can't call everybody who is protesting with the flowers and water and evidence this, we saw it, and she was a part of these things, that these people are terrorists. I think it's the easy way to call these people terrorists, but you know what? We can see it from the video, and we can see it from the footage, and we can see it from the real testimonies of these people, that, you know what, their side and the cameras helping them as the weapon to basically document these things. So they were peaceful protesting, and they were met by the bullets.
But shocking as the images are, why do you think the world's response was so muted, so tepid?
You know what, I will tell you, because one of the reasons that I did this movie, because when I came to them and when I started to investigate and when I started to talk them into this project, a lot of people were like, why we should do this? Because, you know what, the world was neglecting us, abandoned us, and you are ignorant people. And I said, no, the Western world is not abandoned you. We are not ignorant people. And I was talking on behalf of our Western people. I think we are lack of knowledge. We are lack of specific knowledge about Syria. That's why we were shut down. Because at the end of the day, we operating under the fear that was created in a press. And the press created from the rebels negative connotation about these people. So at the end of the day, my idea was to educate people, to bring the lack of knowledge that we are missing right now, to bring all the story of the Syrian people so we can stop fear them and we can understand why these people fleeing.
Khalid, do Syrians feel today that they've been abandoned by the world?
Yes, they do.
Can you tell us about Ghiath Mahtar and how the Assad regime became so frightened by his activism that even now they guard his grave?
Yeah. First of all, it was the very beginning of the Syrian revolution and our peaceful demonstrations. And the regime was terrified to death from these, if I can call them, the icons of the revolution. So it tried its best, the regime, to capture them or to kill them. and he succeeded. He entrapped Ghiath Matar with another icon whose name is Yahya Sharbaji, and he is still in prison, and we don't know if he is alive or dead even.
But Matar is dead.
Matar was killed, and he was brought to his family, butchered.
He was just 25 years old. What had he done in particular?
He demonstrated, and he was held on the shoulders of people, and he chanted against the regime.
Protesters used to use the Syrian flag in all the demonstrations. When and why was it decided not to use it?
We used to raise our, like, Syria's flag because we are Syrians. And out, like, in 2012, the regime started to take these footages from the activists and use them in the state-owned media, telling people that these people are with or supporting Assad. So we took the decision to use the independence flag.
I want to add a little bit to Khulod about that the regime targeting all the activists. For example, two of our characters, Hadi Abdullah or our dearest friend Abdelbaset Sarud, they both were targeted multiple times, and I think they survived, at least each of them survived three assassinations, both of our characters in the movie.
But you also document other tactics used against people who wanted Assad to go. One was hunger. Can you talk about how he tried to starve some people into submission?
You know what? I think Assad using a lot of different tactics, from fear that he creates on the people and trying to break people to the starvation. So he using multiple tactics, from besieging towns and cutting the supplies to the people so kids can starve and die, so yep. people so he can break his own people and make them to stay on his side and fear him and be pro him, same as he was trying to bring the fear by using the chemical weapon. Because in 2013, technically, when the Free Syrian Army advanced a lot towards the Damascus and had a lot of territories under the control of Free Syrian Army, the only way to sustain any power, Assad basically used the chemical weapon on El Ghouta, that is a suburb of Damascus. So Assad, from the fear and these horrible tortures that you just also mentioned, with the hair that put it in the fire or some other horrible tortures, he trying to bring fear or starvation on his own people.
We cannot talk about Syria and doing something in that country without discussing the role of the Chinese and Russians and how worried President Obama was about starting a proxy war. Then there's also the concern about supporting a group that would be, by Western standards, considered a terrorist group. After making the film, how would you advise the current American administration on moving forward in Syria? Because the president has announced possibly sending in ground troops, although they would be directed at ISIS.
You know what, I will tell you something. Right now, it's probably not the filmmaker's advice as American citizen, because I'm American citizen. And I think that, first of all, it's a big mistake because, A, President Trump trying to ally himself with the Russians, who is not targeting ISIS, and you can learn this. Secondly, from the movie, I'm sure you learned that Bashar al-Assad in 2011 released three times two groups of the criminals. One was heavy criminals that became Shabiha, and right now it's legal organization, that technically this organization was kidnapping and killing and doing all dirty job on the side of the Assad. And another group was heavy radicals, that most of them became either Al-Qaeda in Syria, that is Jabhat al-Nusra, or ISIS. So technically, ISIS have direct link to the Assad, who needed some kind of sustaining the power and take attention from him so he can commit most of the crimes to the ISIS that the old world right now is paying attention. So I think Russians, who is not targeting ISIS at all and cooperating with Assad, I think if we will send our troops to the Syria or Iraq, it will be a biggest mistake because it will be more innocent lives will be taken.
How long, Khulod, did it take for the Free Syrian Army to coalesce, and who's funding it?
They started small groups of people who funded themselves by themselves, I mean, through their families, and then they bought rifles and small weapons. But when large number of, like, high-ranking generals defected the army, they started the FSA, they announced it, and then they got the funding from the United States and the Gulf states.
Is that why Assad actually seems to be focused more on going after them than after ISIS or the al-Qaeda groups in
Because they threaten him more than ISIS. ISIS is not following Assad now. They're not targeting Assad, but FSA, they want to liberate the Syrian people from the Assad.
A listener has called in to wonder if you came here as an asylum seeker.
No.
She actually entered yesterday.
It was you just came here yesterday.
Yeah, and I'm leaving on Sunday.
Now, if you had waited a couple of days, you might not have been able to enter the country.
Yeah. It's with the coincidence, new rules. So I arrived before the ratification of the...
And you came here because of this film?
Yes.
Where are you living?
In Turkey.
Uh-huh. And is that a better situation? An awful lot of Syrian refugees have gone to Turkey or gone to other neighboring countries, and the conditions they live under seem to be, which are also documented in this film, are often horrendous.
Because it's close to Syria and they opened doors for us at the very beginning. So it was the first hub for Syrians to seek refuge at.
And I think what the world don't know, since the world, the Western world, talking about Syrian refugees and the huge waves only since 2015, what the world don't know, that the first waves of refugees were received by Lebanon and Jordan, and the first camps in Jordan, actually Zatari was created 2012, I think.
Yeah.
So technically, the first waves of refugees were in the Middle East, and most of the Syrian refugees are, what they accomplished, they're staying on the Middle East, because even to go from Turkey to European Union, you need to have much more money for the smugglers, and at the end of the day, only 27 to 30% of the Syrian refugees are among all the refugees of the European Union. And strangely enough, the press calling everybody who is entering European Union Syrian refugees, that is absolutely wrong.
The Russian entry into the conflict has been particularly devastating. Haven't they been accused of dropping cluster bombs, which are banned by the Geneva Convention?
It's not only cluster bombs.
Phosphorus also?
Yeah.
And it's another one.
The phosphorus, the cluster bombs, and the ones that dig deep in the ground that targets basements.
And we see in the film houses that have been reduced to rubble and infants being pulled out of those basements, of the times they have been killed.
So there is...
What's your sense of the goal of Putin in this?
I think since the Putin cooperating with Assad, I just already mentioned, to bring fear and to break the people. This is the only modus operandi of the Assad regime who is working together with the Russians.
We don't have any time left, but I wonder how you see this conflict ending. Is this going to keep on going on for a while?
Nothing lasts forever, and it will end sooner or later, but it will never stop unless the Russians stop interfering.
And I think another thing, what we need to do, specifically for the American audience, since I'm American and the movie was kind of brought to the Western world, I think all the world need to learn from this movie two things. First, we need to reevaluate our values, what we are having in our days, freedom of speech, democracy, because they're fighting for these values since 2011.
Christ from Syria will be shown at Cinema Village on 12th Street starting this Friday. It'll be there for 1 week. It'll be on HBO Monday the 13th at 10 p.m. And for more information, you go to our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. My great thanks to Evgeny Afanivsky and Khulod Helmy for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.